Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Chat It Up podcast. As always, I'm your host, Shooter, bringing you interviews, news, and reviews about all things Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I gotta say, it's a little strange, but it feels good to be back at it here. It was a nice little break off to enjoy a little bit of this summer madness. As always, have an awesome episode for you guys, so we'll just jump right into things here. We'll start things off with This Day in Upper History, brought to you by the good folks at pasty.com. That's PASTY.com and the Pasty Central Facebook page. So here is August 6th, This Day in Upper History.
Pasty Central Day in History, August 6th. Among performers at Calumet Theater over the years has been Eric Weiss, also known as Harry Houdini. Out east on this day in 1926, Houdini made the headlines, remaining underwater for 91 minutes in one of his great escapes. Magic of another kind came on August 6th when Tim Berners-Lee unveiled his plan for a publicly available internet-working web of computers, publishing the first website on this day in 1991. It would take several years of public comment and formal resolutions by countries around the globe for the World Wide Web to go live in the fall of 94. Among first images to appear from Upper Michigan was the snow thermometer on US 41 north of Mohawk, the first of over 10,000 pages at the address of pasty.com. Pasty Central Day in History, August 6th.
Another huge thank you to the folks over at pasty.com and the Pasty Central Facebook page for making that segment possible. It's time for this week's interview, and it is with my friend Victoria Leonard. Victoria works in the nonprofit space in Marquette County, but she also is heavily involved in the community. She is definitely a doer of many things, and she's a total girl boss, which is awesome. So I had to sit down and talk with her about all the stuff that she's up to. So as I say every single episode, I'm going to just get out of my way and let her tell her own story. So without further ado, let's chat it up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I am here with Victoria Leonard. Victoria, thank you for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Shooter.
Yeah, well, it's been a long time coming. I feel like when I first sat down and kind of made my initial list 2 years ago, you were definitely on that first list of people I wanted to talk to. So I'm glad that we were kind of able to make this happen because, you know, we've known each other for quite a while now, actually. So you grew up in the Sioux over on the East End. When you think back on that time, what are like some key memories that really stand out to you?
So growing up, there were some really cool things in the summer and in the winter. So in the summer, one of my favorite things to do still to this day is to visit the Valley Camp, the museum ship. Okay. I started going there when I was a child. I absolutely love the aquarium, and there's just so much weight with the Edmund Fitzgerald life rafts being there. It's just this really amazing experience to learn the history of the area, and I go back every time I can. I grew up with a boat. My dad had a boat, and me and him and my grandpa Buck would go fishing for perch, pike, and walleye in the St. Mary's River, and so that always is something I hold special. And then we had a cabin in Brimley right by the state park, and so we would tube out there, spend time in the sand, the clay, just really get to enjoy summer by the lake. And then in the winter, I had a really unique experience as a child growing up there because my mom is a permanent resident alien here in the States. She's actually a Canadian citizen. Okay. And so she met my dad at Lake State, and her side of the family is still in Canada, all over Canada. And I was lucky to have my grandpa in Sioux, Ontario when I was growing up. Sure. And so a lot of times on the weekends, we'd head over to Canada. And it wasn't really until I was like late middle school, early high school, that I realized that wasn't something that everyone did. and I remember how easy it was to go prior to the September 11th and some of the changes with customs and border patrol. Sure. And having to get a passport when I turned 18, because I really didn't need ID prior to that. That's when the passport law was put in place. So You know, getting brunch with my grandpa at the Zeller's Cafe in the Station Mall and getting hot chocolate at Tim Hortons and the Bonsu. There's this winter festival called Bonsu in Sioux, Ontario, and okay. they have these ice slides that you slide down just on wow. like your bum. They call them the bum slides.
Okay.
And no sleds or anything. And it was so much fun. And the sculptures were amazing. And so I have this really cool kind of like dual country experience growing up over there. Like I said, I didn't realize how special that was until I got older.
Definitely. I think that's very unique, you know, not something that a lot of people couldn't say. And in kind of in that same vein, at least in my opinion, I feel like the kind of experience on the East End is probably a little different than the rest of the UP. Would you say that kind of perspective that you get is a little bit different, like growing up on that end?
Definitely. More of a connection to Canada, more of a connection to the Lower Peninsula. Especially here in the central UP, I hear people talk about going to Green Bay and Appleton to do their shopping. And growing up over there, it was always Traverse City. Traverse City was only 2.5 hours away. They had a really cool mall back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's where we would go for that kind of stuff, or the outlets in West Branch and, Birch Run. Those were other great places to go. There's a lot more maritime history than mining history. That's another thing I noticed, is the mining is really prevalent here in sure. the central and western UP. And over there, it's very much the Sioux Locks and the Mackinac Bridge and Mackinac Island. And it's so seasonal. We talk in other areas like here in Marquette about how, oh, it's such a tourism-based economy. But growing up in the Sioux, there was a whole section of town that closed down in the winter. Mm-hmm. Because of that seasonality. And it's the same with St. Ignace and Mackinac Island, where in the winter, it's just a completely different town. And so that's always, I thought, been an interesting perspective, that people are like, oh, it's so tourism based. And it's like, let me tell you about tourism based. Like, it's wild.
Well, let's get to the really hard hitting journalism here. I'm going to just kind of take the gloves off. So are you a Clydes person, or are you a West Pier person?
Oh, 100% Clydes. My parents' house is exactly 1 mile from Clydes.
Okay.
So growing up, my mom would let us order Clydes only if we would bike or walk to pick it up.
Okay.
Unless we were taking it in the boat, because it's right by the boat launch that we would use going fishing. So we would pick it up, go on the boat and picnic out on the water, or we could bike or walk to pick it up. But yeah, love Clydes.
it wasn't until in season one, when I went over for the Sioux Film Festival and I was talking with Jason, that he kind of like filled me in on this whole like Clydes versus West Pier thing. I didn't even know it was a thing. Like,
oh, it's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. He said there's definitely like a line drawn in the sand.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you ended up going to Northern to get your degree. Was that like your choice right from the jump, or with having that family connection to LSSU, was there like kind of like that like lure of just staying home?
Yeah. All of my family are Lakers. I'm the anomaly. I'm not going to LSSU. I applied to both and kind of waited out to see who gave me the best financial aid package. And I joke, there's an admissions counselor at Northern that will always be my favorite Valentine. because on Valentine's Day, my senior year, I was in the lunchroom and I got called to the office, and I thought, oh, did like my mom order me a heart-shaped pizza or something? Like, why am I getting called to the office? And I get there and they're like, your admissions counselor is online. Will you go in the guidance office? And I'm like, sure. And he was calling to tell me that I'd gotten a full ride. So I had a scholarship wow. for tuition, room and board at Northern. And so that was not something I was going to turn down.
No, I was so definitely excited. Not.
Yeah, I did my 4 years at Northern.
So I know you got your degree in marketing. What really attracted you to that field of study?
Yeah, I started as a pre-med student.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And found out real quick I didn't love science. And which is like so funny, because I had 4 hours of Mrs. Harrington's business class my senior year of high school. Like, I should have known I didn't like science, right? But I had an amazing mentor. Her name is Christina. And I remember her telling me at one of my brother's hockey games, just because you're smart doesn't mean you have to be a doctor. And so as I was struggling through these tough science classes, I kind of took a step back. I was halfway through my sophomore year. And I remember that I loved working with Microsoft Office Suite in Mrs. Harrington's class, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, all of those programs. So I figured I would apply to the business school. And so I took a couple of business prereqs. And my second semester of my sophomore year, I got a job in the NMU Volunteer Center. And that's that was my second introduction to the nonprofit world. My first was I served on the board of the United Way of the Eastern UP Volunteer Center when I was 16 and 17 as a high school student. And so that was my first introduction. Yeah, it was awesome. So I had these two really great experiences in volunteer centers. And I was like, I want to do this kind of like promotion of volunteerism work and getting people excited about giving back to their communities. And that kind of aligned with marketing. I also looked at PR, but I really liked that the marketing program at Northern included a lot of math and budgeting and accounting. So you had that really great foundation so that it wasn't just here's how to spread the word. It's here's how to spread the word and track it and know if it's successful or not. So that's why I went with marketing.
Okay. That's interesting. I like that you kind of like built this foundation knowing like where you kind of wanted to take it, which I mean, talk about hand in glove. I mean, you graduated in 2011 and you were basically hired by Great Lakes Center for Youth Development, like right away, pretty much. For those that don't know, can you kind of explain what GLCYD like is and what you guys do?
Sure thing. We recently changed our name. I'm really excited about that.
Oh, so I did not know it. That. Yeah. So shame on me.
It's okay. We changed it to Grow and Lead Community and Youth Development. Yeah. And so it reflects a little bit more of what we do. So we're one of 11 capacity building centers in Michigan. And capacity building centers exist to provide services to other nonprofit organizations. So things like training, consulting, coaching, strategic planning, board development, all of those like really nonprofit specific things is what we're able to provide. And we specifically look at it through the lens of youth because, get this, Scott, youth stay in communities they help build. What a surprise, right?
Like,
we're walking examples of this.
Color me shocked.
So, we like to encourage nonprofits to get youth involved, listen to youth voice, because we believe that when all youth thrive in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, that is like the ultimate. That's what we want, is we want kids to have a great foundation. We want them to be able to stay here if they want to. We want them, the nonprofit sector, to be strong because they're the ones that are really providing those services that make communities great. So it's a really cool thing to be able to help the nonprofits that are both youth and non-youth serving to get them really thinking about how can they impact youth in their communities.
Yeah. I think of how many kids come to school at Northern and at LSSU and at Michigan Tech and even at Bay and Bay West and Gogebic, you know, all of the colleges around the UP, Finlandia, and some of them stay, but we also lose a lot of kids too. You know, so it's like, for me, it's kind of twofold. It's number one, like, how do we keep and retain talent in the UP? And then once they're here, how do we, you know, give them the tools to really make their community better?
Right. Yeah. And like, it was Dave Nyberg that said something just so profound when I was first starting out in my career, because he had just moved up here. And it was along the lines of, we do what we can to sustain living in the Upper Peninsula. And that just like, I really felt that because little known fact, I worked as a big box store cashier nights, my first year and a half out of college, just to make ends meet. So I was working full time in the nonprofit and also working 6 to 11, 4 nights a week and Sundays, just to make sure that I had enough money to sustain in Marquette because that's where I wanted to stay. Wow. And yeah. So as I got promoted from an assistant to an associate, I was able to back off on that second job, but it was a necessity at that time to be able to stay here. And I wouldn't change it for the world because I learned so much about the real people that live here, right? Like,
right,
when you're working in a big box store, you see all the walks of life And it was just a really interesting eye-opening experience for me. And I think working in the nonprofit sector, it was something that really helped me to understand the communities that we're serving.
Absolutely. I can totally relate to that. You know, when I first moved to the area, I was teaching. And then when I got laid off, I wanted to stay in the area. And I ended up working at Gander Mountain for I would say 6 to 8 months until I found like a full-time job. I can really relate to what you're saying of like doing what you need to do, like to stay in an area that you care about. Kind of speaking of the community, to piggyback off of that a little bit, you and I, we kind of really first met and got to know each other through the unprofessional organization in Marquette County, which is now Connect Marquette. At the time it was 40 Below. Can you talk a little bit about your time on the board of that organization?
Yeah, I served on the board for 4 years, and I was both the first female and the first person in their 20s to serve as president. So that was really scary. I was like, oh, this is going to be the year it all tanks. But we made it through. And it was actually really great. We had such an outstanding board. Like, I think about the people that we worked with over the 4 years, you know, and it was amazing, just a great crop of people. And I love that the people that were involved really saw it as so much more than just a networking organization. And we really ingrained ourselves in the community and things like the Iron Range Roll and being at the UP 200 and the Gourmet Gone Wild events where we were learning how to cook wild game, like some super random but really awesome experiences. And then just the interest in young talent at that time, with the MEDC being very, very focused on keeping young people the access to people like the governor and lieutenant governor, and their interest in hearing what we had to say was just, that was such an incredible experience. I look back on those 4 years fondly.
I do too. It's funny that you mentioned like the interesting people and the talent that we had in the room during that time that we were on the board together. I feel like I could almost do like a separate season of like just people from 40 Below, just make the rounds and talk to everybody and catch up and see what they're up to. But, that, you know, my real big takeaway from that was, and you could probably appreciate this from being not from the area and then, but then living there and making that your home, it really helped me kind of get a behind the scenes and kind of get a perspective of Marquette County from a lot of different angles, because we were working with people from just about every kind of industry you could think of, really.
And like the community leaders we had access to, that always blew my mind at how we could just ask someone something and they were so interested to hear our perspective as young professionals. That was really, really cool.
Well, and so besides just that organization, I mean, you've been involved with a lot of other stuff over the years. I mean, you mentioned with the Student Volunteer Center, I know you were involved with that, correct? I know you do the Fireworks Committee, and there's a lot of other committees that, I mean, you're involved in a lot of stuff. What motivates you to stay so involved and active in all these things?
Yeah, I heard a quote back in 2014 when I was at a conference on volunteerism and service. What a surprise. And it was Reverend C.T. Vivian, who was a pioneer in the civil rights movement. And he said, you can't change the culture if you don't love the people. And that has always really stuck with me. And the more I get involved in the community, the more I love the people. And I'm not out here to, you know, change the culture, but I can totally understand that when you live somewhere and you just love the community so much, it makes you want to be engaged and involved and to know your neighbors and to know the people that are working on all of the different things that make the community great, because there are so many opportunities to get involved. All the, unfortunately not this year, but normally, you know, all the festivals and performance arts, and you're really building the community you want to live in when you're involved, and you're using the privilege and power that you have to make things better. And I think that is just a really awesome way that we can shape the community and make it a welcoming place where we have cool things that people want to come here and they want to live here and stay here and be involved in.
To circle back to your job, do you think that that's kind of like what you enjoy most about the nonprofit world, because those two kind of fit so hand in glove?
Oh, absolutely. And just some of the innovation that we see up here in the UP. So a really great example, I just learned about this program last year when I was doing some work with them. Over on Mackinac Island, you're familiar with Meals on Wheels, right? The
yes.
senior food program. But there are no wheels on Mackinac Island. So how do they deliver meals? On snowmobiles. Meals
really?
On snowmobiles. It's so cool. And they actually use some of their youth advisory council members from their community foundation. So it's teenagers that go out and deliver meals to seniors that live on the island year round. And where else would you find that? Right? Like,
I thought you were going to say, I thought you were going to say, I thought you were going to say like on horseback, and it was like called like courses on horses or something.
Oh, that would have been really cool. I should suggest that for this summer. So good. And the other thing I love about working in the nonprofit sector is there's about a little over 2,500 nonprofits in the UP, I believe. Maybe a little different now, but right in between, you know, 2,300 and 2,500, I believe was the last count. But it feels like a family reunion when all the nonprofits get together, because we are working on things that really, they're all connected, right? Like,
right.
Everything is connected. So even though it might be something completely different that an agency is working on than what I'm working on, there's still these kind of like spiderweb weave points where it's like, okay, they're doing that and I'm doing this. And if we collaborate on it together, we can make it that much better, even though it's not 100% the same thing.
Sure.
So it's really awesome. And I think it's something that the UP nonprofit sector does really, really well. When you talk to people outside of the area, that collaboration, especially, you know, you have people collaborating 6 hours apart. If you have someone in Ironwood working with someone over in Sault Ste. Marie, or Houghton working with Sault Ste. Marie. So there's some really unique opportunities for nonprofits in different areas to connect and make change on a big scale compared to in other areas where they kind of stick in to their neighborhood.
Sure.
So yeah, no, it's really connected and awesome.
That makes sense. And you know, you touched a little bit earlier, just you kind of mentioned in passing, like, you know, obviously there's a lot less festivals and different things going on because of this pandemic. So, I mean, what other types of like difficulties have you faced, you know, in regards to, you know, this pandemic and everything that's been going on?
Oh, for sure. Canceling the fireworks was 100% the hardest thing I ever had to do. prior to that, canceling last year's fireworks on July 4th because of the thunderstorm was the hardest thing to do. So
sure.
Kind of there. but that was so hard. Really canceling anything has been really hard. I've had to be part of a lot of discussions around do we do this or not? And just having confidence that you have the best data available and you're making a decision from a place of love for your community, and knowing that you're making this decision to try to protect them, and that it's okay to skip a year. It's going to be different, but it's going to be okay, and we're going to get through it. I really miss people, you know. I'm still working from home. I know you work from home too, so
yeah.
It's just different. None of the after hours events or festivals or Blueberry Fest, you know, like all those fun things where you get to reconnect with people. And then I have like two autoimmune issues with psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis, and so just like the unknown of if that impacts my experience in the pandemic has been
sure.
a challenge for me, and figuring out like what am I willing to do and what am I not willing to do and what boundaries do I have to put up. And that's been really hard for me because I just like to do everything.
Yeah. I hear you there. I like, you know, I'm a very social person. And so mm-hmm. to like, not that you can't be social, but it's just different. So that's been mm-hmm. a little bit kind of tough for me, especially with working from home, because, you know, like, after being home all week long, I could pretty much go like a really long time without seeing anybody besides like my fiance
yeah.
and my dog. Like, so by the time the weekend rolls around, like I want to be like social, but it's hard to kind of do that.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, I keep my circle pretty small. So we've been spending a lot of time with family and that type of stuff. But what else have you been doing to like pass the time during the pandemic?
Yeah, well, I love to knit, as I think you know. I am a knitter.
Yeah, I didn't know that you're a knitter.
And I have this poncho I've been working on since 2017. So that has been a big project. I think I'll finish it next month. I'm really excited. I've been doing a lot more reading, which is great. I feel like that's something I never really had time to do. So a healthy mix of personal development and historical fiction have been the areas that I've been reading a lot of. Of course, journaling. I started a whole new journal to document this experience of living through a pandemic. So look forward on looking back at that. Listening to podcasts while I'm walking. And then I too have a dog. His name is Echo. And my partner Chris actually got Echo as a puppy. And so Chris had a lot of one-on-one time with Echo, but I didn't. And so Echo's old now. He's 10 and a half. But we've finally had, you know, 4 or 5 months of like just him and I together, especially now that Chris is back at work. And that's just been, I've cherished that so much because he's getting up there, and to have like these months where I just get to chill out with him and he sits with me while I'm typing, you know, that's just been really special. And I'm really glad I had that.
Yeah. It's really nice having like a pet around. Cause I mean, otherwise it's better for them because then they're not lonely, but at the same time, then it's not quite as lonely for you, like just sitting at home when you're doing your work, you know? Right.
Yeah. We finally like bonded enough where I can like tell him commands and he does them. And I'm like, this is great. I should have done this years ago.
You mentioned that you've been listening to podcasts. I know that you're a big podcaster the same way that I am. What stuff have you been listening to? You got any recommendations for me?
Oh my gosh. So many. So NPR's Planet Money is doing this economic summer school where they're using real world news stories to kind of teach economic principles. And I've just found that so interesting. To kind of lighten the mood, I really love Mission to Zix, which is an improv sci-fi podcast. And it is hilarious. Definitely not okay for kids. So if you have kids, I don't recommend that one for car rides. I found one called Endless Thread. That's all they find interesting stuff on Reddit and investigate it. And that one's been really cool. I actually learned about this soil sampling you can do, and you can send it to a university and they're like tracking the fungi that live in soil in different parts of the US. And so I went and got my kit, and sure enough that they like took it and there was fungus in my dirt. It was really cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And then there's a new local one. I don't know if you've listened to it yet, but the Portage Health Foundation has a podcast now, and it's new. They probably have 8 episodes out or about now. But they're focusing kind of on two things right now. One is addiction up in the Keweenaw, and that has just been a fascinating listen. And then the other is cooking. So they have like a podcast cooking show. So
interesting.
Two totally different things, but Kevin and Michael up at the Portage Health Foundation did an awesome job with that, and that comes out normally on Sundays. I've really enjoyed listening to it.
Very interesting. I've been going through Code Switch on NPR. It was really good.
Yes, I love that one.
I went through all the 1619 stuff from the New York Times. That was really good. The other one that I've been spending a lot of time listening to is The Last Podcast on the Left, it's called. So it's like 3 or 4 guys, and it's basically kind of comedy, but they're looking into and talking about unexplained or supernatural or like paranormal type things, but no topic is off limits, but they like take it from a very like not skeptical point of view, but like a very like level balanced, like if you and I were sitting and having a conversation about something that you couldn't explain, like you're not jumping to conclusions at all, but you're like making jokes about it along the way. It's been good. So I've been kind of digging into that one a lot. And then The Office Ladies, that's been my
yes. big
movie. I'm a huge fan of The Office. So I've been going through the Office Ladies podcast, and now there's a new one by Kevin from the show. He's got one called The Oral History of the Office that just started. And he's got like everybody that was on the show is coming back and just kind of telling like their side of everything with the show. So I'm excited to jump into that one.
Yeah. Well, if you're into that paranormal stuff, you have to read Upernatural Haunts from Tim Ellis. Yes.
Tim. Yeah, yes. Tim was on the podcast, of course.
Yes, he was. Yes. He's great. I read that during quarantine, and it was so cool. It was so good. The Valley Camp is haunted, according to it. So
yes, yes, it is. Yeah, I think you might have told us, I think he might have told the story about that on our episode. I'm pretty sure.
I think he did. Yeah. Yep. Totally got to read it. It's so good.
So to kind of like circle back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier with like the, you know, the nonprofit world and being involved in the community. I'm assuming one of the other like difficult parts of like the nonprofit world is probably that like fundraising never really stops. How do you kind of keep that like part of the job like fresh and successful and like keep that going all the time? Because that's one of the things when I think about the nonprofit world that I'm always curious about, just from my own personal perspective.
Yeah, it's definitely been really interesting right now, especially because the most effective way to raise money is one-on-one asks between individuals. And when you can't go out to events and build those relationships to make those asks, it's a lot harder. But there's some really cool stuff coming from a variety of nonprofits that are really pivoting, especially in the event space, to things like online auctions, virtual 5Ks. So especially right now, there's that out of the box thinking that's super critical. One of the things that's like one of my work passion projects is Giving Tuesday, which is historically the Tuesday following Thanksgiving. And I help with the, oversee the Give 906 campaign, which is a region-wide call to give locally, here in the 906 area code. And the projects that come out of that are just so cool. And I am so proud of all the nonprofits that participate because it really is an inspiring day where you can see firsthand what you're giving to and how it's making a difference in your community. And it gets everyone just really excited in the sector, out of the sector, about their community and how it doesn't have to be money or fundraising either that we focus on. It can be things like volunteerism. That people need help with. And one of the things I know here in Marquette that kind of worries me in the philanthropic sphere is that all of those festivals that we have are fundraisers, right? Things like Food Fest, the beer sales and food sales, part of that goes into the Exchange Club's grant program. And so these grant programs aren't going to be either existing this year, or they may be saving funds for next year too. And especially our small all volunteer based nonprofits that really rely on those funds, it might be a little bit trickier this coming year. So that's, I think, one of my concerns is how do we make up for those fundraisers where people didn't realize they were participating in a fundraiser?
Okay. You know, like you bring up a good point about all of these different like festivals, and I never would have thought to think of that backside of it. Like a lot of those are fundraisers for other things. Mm-hmm. Now that you just said that, when you're like, oh, this is something that worries me. Now I'm worried about it.
Right.
And I have no like stake in the game at all, but now I'm like, oh geez, like
yeah, it's like thousands of dollars that isn't gonna be coming back to community organizations this year. So it all adds up.
It definitely does. You know, the only way that this stuff like can continue to thrive, and like you said, thinking outside the box and being successful with it, is having leaders that step up. And, you know, I would consider you, you know, one of the young female leaders in Marquette County, like for sure. You know, what sort of advice would you give to any ladies that are out there that are listening into this, that are like, you know what, like, I want to step up and get involved civically. I want to do something about this. I mean, what, I guess even to non-female listeners too, I mean, what advice would you give to these people out there that maybe want to step up and help?
Yeah, well, the first thing would just be to show up. Show up as often and as many things as you're interested in to find what you're really passionate about, right? So say yes a lot in the beginning and figure out what are those things. Yeah. Yeah, just keep saying yes until you're like, okay, I'm kind of tapped out, and then start saying no to the things that aren't getting you really, really, really excited, right? Especially for the young women, people really want to hear from you because there's not a lot of us at the table all that often. And that was one of the things I found. I applied to a state leadership program and a national leadership program for nonprofit, up-and-coming nonprofit leaders, and I got into both of them. And in both cases, there were not very many young women from rural areas. So that's like something that's often overlooked is rural America in general when sure. you're looking at sort of those bigger programs. And one of the things that's so cool about living in a rural, smaller town is you have access to people that in large communities you don't necessarily have access to. Like the mayor or your state rep or your state senator, or even here in the UP, you know, we have congressional offices specifically serving the UP and US Senate offices that are serving the UP, and the governor has an office specifically for the UP. And so there are so many ways that you can get active and build those relationships with people in those offices to make sure that your perspective is being heard, because like I said, that rural young woman specifically is not at the table very often. And then be unapologetically yourself, right? Like, don't change and act like you're not from the middle of nowhere. I'm like famous for being like, I'm Victoria from the middle of nowhere, 8 hours north of Detroit, you know, like, because they hear I'm from Michigan and they just assume I'm from Detroit. Sure. And you have to get the hands out and be like, no, it's up here, you know, closer to Canada than I am to Detroit. And just leaning into that and being proud of where you're from and being proud of representing the UP wherever you are.
I like that. I really, really like that, especially like leaning into who you are and mm-hmm. bringing that voice to the table, because I agree with you completely that it's a voice that needs to be heard more often, and it's mm-hmm. it's not happening enough. So,
yep.
You know, we've kind of hit on everything that I wanted to talk about. I mean, is there anything else that you wanted to kind of bring up or discuss? I mean,
I don't think so. No, this is great.
Well, I'm glad that I had good questions for you. I mean, it's always interesting to sit down and, like, if you can call it an interview, but speak with somebody that you've known for quite a long time. Cause then it's like, I know some of this stuff, but the people listening probably mm-hmm. don't, but there is mm-hmm. some things that I did actually learn about you along the way that I didn't quite
oh, cool. know.
So I guess I did get something out of it, but, well, you know, if you don't have anything else that you want to bring up, I guess I'll just stick to what my final question always is for everybody. And that's how do you like your pasty?
Oh, with ketchup, of course.
Okay. You're a ketchup person. Do you have any favorite go-to spot in town that you go to get your pasty?
Well, I'm gluten-free. So okay. I want to give a shout out to Irontown out in Nagani. They have a gluten-free pasty in case there's any other gluten-freers out there.
Interesting.
And it's
okay.
really good. It's really good. I buy a lot of them and I just keep them in my freezer and they are delicious.
Awesome. Okay. That's good to yeah. know. I guarantee you that there's somebody else out there that's going to listen to this episode and they're going to be like, oh, awesome. Now I know where I can go and get one.
Yes. It was a really exciting thing to find.
Well, Victoria, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast and sharing your story. It's been a lot of fun to catch up with you and give you an opportunity to kind of put your story out there to everybody. So thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This was awesome.
And that's going to wrap things up for this week's episode. Another huge thank you to Victoria for taking the time to talk with me. I know it was definitely something that was out of her comfort zone, but thought she did a really great job, and she was really gracious with her time, so I'm just really appreciative. So a little housekeeping to wrap things up here. As I always say, I want to hear from you guys, so don't hesitate to reach out and drop me a line. You can email me at chatituppod@gmail.com. Otherwise, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Just type in Chat It Up Podcast and you should be able to find me. Also, wherever you're listening in, please subscribe, rate, leave me a review, tell a friend. You know, that's the way that this thing grows and continues to move forward. Other than that, I thank you all for listening in. And I'm your host, Shooter, reminding you to wear a mask, social distance, keep your chin up, and your eyes forward.